Hello friends, happy new year and welcome to a new decade of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. I can only imagine where we'll be at the end of this decade, probably worldwide, making loads of money, just doing this as a job once a week. Superb. My name is Mark Heath, your host as ever, and with me, the boys are all back together for the first time since Christmas, so I want to give them a big build-up. First of all, on my left, wearing a plum hoodie, zip-up, cardigan.
It's not plum.
What is it?
It's maroon.
It's not maroon.
Yeah, it is.
There's no way that's maroon.
No.
What is it then?
Lavender.
It's lavender? What colour lavender are you?
That's plum, isn't it?
Oh.
Anyway, while we debate this, Ross, why don't you hit his intro music?
It's a hoodie.
It's Hutch Hogan, baby.
Deep red.
It's definitely not deep red.
Like dried on blood.
Like okay. That. It's getting dark.
Like that.
Hello. Friend, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Happy New Year.
Hello, yep.
How was your Christmas?
Yeah, good, thanks. Seems a long time
ago. It does, doesn't it? It's a matter of days ago.
Yeah, quite a lot of days.
Well, yeah, true. Yeah. There's a lot happened since then.
Yeah.
His partner in crime, the man wearing a coat in the studio. Ross? It's Dr. Stuart Watson.
Hello. I'd call that grape.
I still think it's plum. We'll tweet a picture and see what the people think, the KOA army think. It's important. It's not like one of that what was it, blue and black,
yeah,
or white and gold
dress. Nonsense dress.
Nonsense, wasn't it?
Absolute nonsense.
And of course, the fourth wheel to our Kings of Anglia truck, trailer, juggernaut, awake this morning, and in the studio as well. Tremendous. Anytime you want to press play on your intro music, Ross, go for it. The idea is it's a bed. You don't wait for me to introduce you. Sorry. Producer Ross.
The best producer on planet Earth.
Survivor of a lightning strike, wearer of a beard, owner of many new pairs of trainers.
Yes. Eater of sweets.
Eater of sweets. How are you?
Good.
Excellent.
I like Hutch's hoodie.
That's your sort of vibe, isn't
so
it?
What
that's
colour,
your kind of
you're,
colour.
You're the deciding vote then. What's the colour? What colour is it?
Brown?
It's not brown.
Oh,
what is wrong with you?
Move on.
Jesus.
Move on.
You had one job, Ross.
Move on.
And you've gone mad.
Okay.
Boys, as I say, it's the first time we've all been together since, I think, before Christmas in the studio. I said Happy New Year. It's not really been much of a Happy New Year thus far for Town fans. But in terms of outside of work, obviously you've all been working very hard over Christmas. How are we all? Did we have a good Christmas? Did we get up to much? What did we destroy? What do you do the most damage to food-wise in your house?
I had a very poor Christmas food-wise.
What?
All the individual elements, just fine, but none of the good overlap.
What's your go-to, though? You know, back in the day, the halcyon days of the Crisp podcast, Stu coined the term eating emotively. What, over Christmas, when you're smashing everything in the house, because everything's fair game, what do you eat most of emotively? You're sitting
See, this is the problem. We had nothing in our house.
What's wrong with you?
Because we were constantly on the move to other people's for the...
You had nothing in your house?
Nothing of any excitement.
So when you were in the house, other people's houses, what were you smashing? Are you a chocolates man? Are you a savouries man?
Twiglets, mainly.
Twiglets?
Just
good choice. The only problem with Twiglets is you get that residue on your fingers, don't you?
That's great. Yeah. That's not a problem. I'm all for that.
You're all for that.
Give me that. Give me the What's It residue. I've got no residue issues with me.
Big fan of residues.
Yes, please.
Absolutely.
Mighty yeasty residue.
Stewie.
That sounds perfect.
Stewie, we know from that podcast that you're a big fan of bread and cheese and butter. Is that what you smash over Christmas?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Alcohol intake goes up.
Obviously.
Tubs of sweets, chocolate logs.
Day after.
I'm finding it's worse now. Because it's now like, we did a lot of hosting this year, so we've now got, you go mad, don't you? You buy far more than you need. And it's now like, well, this has got to go now. This has got to be seen off. So you don't really need it, but...
Is that the opposite of eating emotively? You're just eating out of necessity.
Yeah.
Just
eating practically,
I've got to eat those cheese straws.
Before
four packs of them.
Before January the 1st, they must go.
Yeah.
Roscoe, what were you smashing over? Actually, hold on. Hold the phone. I've just remembered, there was obviously big news over Christmas. Paul Lambert signed a new deal. There was even bigger news in the office on Friday. Ross stood up and made a bold proclamation. He said, boys, over Christmas, I've had a revelation. I have learned that I love...
prawns.
Yeah, so tell us the story.
Just had them on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And then I had them on Christmas Day. Then on Boxing Day, and I just went... these are very nice.
Yeah.
It's just so nice.
Just to be clear, it's not like you've never had prawns before.
Yeah, I've had prawns before.
But you just had a revelation this Christmas.
I think how they were cooked by my family, I just went, these are very nice.
Were they cooked fresh?
Yeah, fresh.
So that's probably what's done it for you.
Yeah.
Rather than the ones that are already cooked.
Yeah. What was the dish that transformed them for you?
You know, the standard prawn cocktail, you know, starter. Yeah. But the way my sister did it, well done to my sister Jade. She was...
Bravo, Jade.
Yeah, she... did a really good job.
She's changed your life.
I had two servings of that before the mains. I went, this is just lovely.
And on Friday, Roscoe left the office saying, I'm going to get myself a prawn mayonnaise sandwich.
I did.
So that's what he's on now.
Yeah.
So the sandwich man needs to step his game up if he wants to keep your trade.
He does have prawns normally.
Does he?
But they're normally with avocado or stuff, and I'm like, but it's 2020 New Year, maybe I need to have
need
a bit
to get
of
your sister
kit.
To do some avocado cooking then. Get you into them as well.
Smash avo.
Yeah.
I was smashing mostly roasted peanuts, dry roasted peanuts, and anything crispy. That's my big weakness. Speaking of weaknesses, boys, Ipswich Town got a lot of weaknesses at the moment. Slick link there. They went to Exeter at the weekend. There were three wins from Wembley. I was starting to get a bit excited that we might have a Wembley trip to report on this season. Some bright amongst all the darkness of Town over the past decade. But unfortunately, they lost.
Yep, nope, none of that. Lights off, please.
Yeah, didn't want to go to Wembley anyway. That's the line. yes, well played, Roscoe. Excellent. You're on the ball to start the new year.
That's a bed.
It is a bed. So, yeah, 2-1 away, Exeter. Basically, Exeter's reserve side. Town put out quite a strong side. And they still lost. So, your thoughts, please.
I had trophy fever on the way down. I was so excited.
Yeah.
And then it turns out trophy fever isn't good. It's actually an ailment.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with it now. It's kind of, I'm getting the back end of trophy fever.
I fear for Hutchie because he's been very clear that he's all in on the EFL/ELF trophy from the very start this year.
It's a nonsense competition, isn't it? Let's be honest. I think I was wrong.
I fear for your mental state now. Now it's all over.
The carpet has been yanked from beneath my feet. I'm going to struggle. But they should have won. You can't really make it up at the moment. You go there hoping, right, we knew that Exeter were probably going to make changes. Ipswich made changes too. They made eight of their own. But you've got to think that Ipswich's eight changes still leaves a significantly better side than an Exeter nine change team, and it did, but just couldn't get it done, and it's really sad.
This music is not helping. It was an Exeter B side. I mean, for our fear going down there was Exeter were flying in League Two. They might put out their strongest team against a sort of, and then the whole sort of lack of chemistry, rotation stuff would come back to bite Ipswich. But Exeter put out, I think it was nine changes in the end because they had to change their goalkeeper after the warm-up. But nine changes, I think they had about four players aged 20 or younger. The kind of senior fringe players were veterans of 35, 36 that hadn't been playing. A couple coming back from injury, just like Ipswich, so Ipswich can't even really play that card. They should have won that game. Did they play well enough to win it? Probably, but they didn't. They didn't. So all this chat about stats and domination and etc. etc. doesn't matter.
I think that's the thing that frustrated me the most is that, yeah, they didn't win. They conceded two poor goals, really, but they probably did do enough to win. They had some really good. They had some good spells. They made some chances, but they couldn't take them. And that's probably more frustrating. This music is
perfect.
It's going to tip me over the edge, Ross. Yeah.
Have you got any Radiohead, Ross? Bang that on as well when this one runs out.
but yeah, it's frustrating. Like Will Keane scored a good goal, a good 1-2 with Freddie Sears for his goal and a really good finish into the bottom corner. But he also missed a header that he'd want back to do that again. Freddie Sears had a fairly good chance that you would hope that maybe a Freddie Sears in full flow, fully fit, in form would put away as well. They had some really good spells in the second half, especially down the left flank. Miles Kenlock was almost the focal point of an attack, which led to Ross on the way home giving credit to his man
begrudgingly.
He leaned forward and said, boys, I know I don't like him,
Honestly, I don't like him.
Well, you did.
He likes him as a person, not as a player.
Yeah. But I'm going to have to give him some credit. Yeah. And he played well. They had these moments of attack, but the final 10 minutes suddenly became incredibly nervy. I think, I don't know if that's a product of the past, of the 14 games that went before or whatever, but the last 10 minutes you kind of were fearing that the sucker punch would come, and it did.
Had to be Lee Martin as well, didn't it? Had to be, getting that goal.
He enjoyed that as
well. I bet
he did. When he came on, and I think the away fans were chanting, what a waste of money. And when he scored, I think I didn't actually see it, but I'm reliably informed he ran back the length of the pitch to sort of give some back to the away fans. He said afterwards it's all good light-hearted banter. And
it's just banter.
Please, it was just banter, as Richard Keys would say. he enjoyed that. It was him who scored the winning penalty, wasn't it, when at the start of the ill-fated Hurst era in that League Cup game as well. So it kind of hit home to me as we were leaving and we were listening to all the FA Cup third round results come in on the radio, thinking it wasn't that long ago that we used to sort of bemoan the fact that they never got past the FA Cup third round, and now they're not even in it, and they're playing in a rearranged EFL Trophy regionalised game at Exeter, losing in that to a League Two side's reserve team. And the saddest thing of all, it doesn't even make a ripple on the national consciousness. It's like, oh, and PS, it's like a side note, a footnote to everything else that's going on, isn't it? And that just kind of underlined and reminded me of where the football club is at, really, which is all rather sad.
Obviously, we'll get on to the various issues surrounding the game. There was one bright spot, of course. A young man called Teddy Bishop, dribbling Bishop, who was flames from reading your reports. Man of the match from both of you. He did 75 minutes on his return. He's not even played an under-23s game, has he, yet?
Not a minute.
So tremendous to be able to do that, literally. I mean, obviously he had a couple of minutes against Wickham, but fantastic to come back and then be so impressive in his first game back. I know it was against Exeter, but even so, he's still got to do it. So how impressive was Teddy on Saturday?
Very, very. I find it hard to describe what position he was playing. It's kind of a shuffled inside, advanced forward, attacking midfielder.
Yeah, it was
a bit of a makeshift
3-4-3. I would probably call that formation. Yeah. You had Keane as a central striker, and then kind of Sears and Bishop either side. So Bishop, an inside right forward. You know, if you can go with a bit of a throwback. But he was left half. He wasn't playing wide, was he?
No.
He was kind of tucked in and allowed to pick up little pockets of space, and he looked good.
Yeah, confidence that he played with. I think there was a moment inside the first couple of minutes where he got sort of barged to the floor, and that's always a nervous time when you during a Teddy Bishop.
He stayed sort of flat on his stomach, didn't he? And you said, "Get up, Teddy! Come on, get up!"
Yeah, it does make me nervous, but maybe he was doing that to play to the crowds, just to get people going a bit. But you know, he played really well, and it was just nice to see him playing with the confidence that he'd ended last season with. That he was picking up the ball and running with it. He didn't start his sort of run of games in January like that this year. It took him a while to get going, but to hit the ground running like he did against an Exeter B side, albeit, really positive.
There is another player we've got to talk about, sadly, on the flip side of things. It seems to be singled out a little bit at the moment, Big Totes. We've had a few questions in mailbag, which I'll just quickly read out. Peckham Blue says, secondly, surely NCR has played his last game for Town, not up to it even for League Two. Martin Robinson, anyway, back for Toto, running out of chances, surely. Luke Moyles says, when will we actually be able to offload Toto? Who will want him? I shouldn't really single him out, but your picture of him, I tweeted with the mailbag appeal, prompted the thought. And obviously, there's been, I noticed on Twitter, there's been a bit over the weekend of Town fans actually messaging him and kind of giving abuse, which is bang out of order.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. What's
pathetic,
the point in that?
Pathetic behaviour. Don't do that.
You wouldn't like that if he came to your work and after you'd had a bad day and told you you were having a bad day in not so polite terms. So that's pointless. Don't do that. But Toto, what do we say about Toto?
He's not having a good season, is he? Let's be honest. If we're talking about stopping a rotation of players at the back or throughout the whole team, I think it's a struggle to see him being one of the one of the chosen regular league starters in the rest of the season. And you just look at the season that he's had. It's through no fault of effort, absolutely not. But he had two league appearances, first two league appearances of the season. One, he got subbed at half time. Second, off after 37 minutes. It's just a struggle for him at the moment, and it's sad to see in many ways, because he has shown on a few occasions just how good he can be and what attributes he's got, but it's a struggle at the moment.
I had two moments during the game on Saturday where things happened that made me involuntarily do things. The first was with the goal where I applauded because it was that good a goal. The Will Keane won, the chest, the layoff, the 1-2, the finish outside of the boot. And before I even tweeted goal, I had to applaud that because that was special. So that was a positive. And the second was a moment when Toto had a complete moment of miscontrol. And then in that split second afterwards, you grit your teeth and you know the big recovery tackle was going to come in, and he completely missed that and wiped his man out, and that involuntarily made me put my head in my hands. And he is a bit like that to watch. Your heart's in your mouth the whole time. Your bum's clenched because you just don't know what's going to happen with him. And I think back to the summer, and I think that was a real sort of sliding doors moment for Toto, was when his hamstring went in pre-season. And that was just clearing a ball, no one around him, and he's, I can't remember if he tore it or whether he strained it or what, but you shouldn't be getting those sort of injuries in pre-season. And I think Paul Lambert's kind of alluded to his disappointment that happened. And he would have started the first game of the season against Burton. Chambers was suspended at that time, and who knows what sort of path he would have been on, because he finished last season really well. People forget about that. Was it the final game against Leeds?
He was immense at that game. He really was.
Good. He's coming back to League One, a league that he's been really good in before with Shrewsbury, finished third, got his move. And who knows, you know, if he'd have started that first game, and he seems very much a confidence player, and that's the same for everyone, but he seems like someone that, I mean, you talked about some of those messages that were going to him. That will affect him. And I know we've kind of half-jokingly talked about my exchange with him earlier in the season, but, you know, he picked me up on things that I'd written, and that obviously tells you that he's an overthinker, and, he, you know, that sort of stuff is probably affecting his performances. And, overwhelmingly, it's sad to see. I think probably getting subbed the other week in the first half probably put a little element of doubt, and it can snowball, and it's going to be difficult for him at the moment.
If we're talking about Ipswich getting back to basics, haven't we, in the last couple of weeks. Luke Chambers was talking about we need to get back to basics, be hard to beat. It's really hard to put a player out there, but you've just described him as a player where your heart's in your mouth, and that's not back to basics, is it? That's not being strong at the back, playing the percentages there, not taking too many risks, and it's difficult. Mm. It's difficult to see that.
Boys, obviously there's one other major disappointment from Saturday. No Aaron Drynan. Now, you'd built me up to believe that not only was he going to be on the squad, in the squad, on the bench, he was probably going to come on and score.
I think you might have taken that.
That was maybe journalistic license. But, Drizzy. Devastated. I had my shirt ready. I was going to wear it when he was announced in the squad. What happened? What's going on?
They went stronger than that, didn't they?
Is it just a case of them trying to talk him up to get rid of him, do you reckon?
No.
Sure?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's good then. That's positive. Boys, before
we move
on.
You need to get yourself up to an under-23s match. It's probably with your shirt on. That's probably what needs to happen.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, they're at Charlton today, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well,
if you settle
let's,
after
let's
this,
bang this out quickly and I'll get in the car. Boys, before we move on from Exeter, just one more thing. You have to drive yourself to Exeter. Scandalous.
Joke.
The Scarlet Lady was not on offer this weekend. So the three of you left Suffolk at 7 a.m. in the pool car, driving yourself.
We had two false starts.
Yeah.
First of all,
Ross, does one involve Ross?
Ross left his phone at home.
Well, I thought I did, but then I took my jacket here off and I put it in the boot, and of course that's where I left my phone. And of course I was like, oh no! So I ran into the house and went, I don't know where it is. And I went, it could be in my coat pocket. And yes, it was. It was with us.
We haven't left Kesgrave, in fairness. Yeah. Okay. We hadn't got far.
Good.
So that the boys were marginally late then meeting me at the office, which meant I jumped straight in the car with them, and we
getting
got
the excuses in.
We got a few yards down the road, stopped at the lights, and I realised I'd left all of my gear in the boot of my car. So we turned around and got that. And from that point onwards, I think we thought the day was going to be cursed. But travel wise, it was all right.
Can I also one of the KOA Army, Justin Grimwood, tweeted a picture of you at work. What on earth were those desks about? Are they like sort of school desks? There, steel school
that's what
desks.
We get everywhere. That's not on.
Is it like sort of flip up desks?
Yeah, that's not uncommon.
What are you picturing our working environments to be?
Well, better than that.
Well, it's not.
That's it.
That's a shame.
We were in the away end.
Well, I saw. Yeah. I mean, then I think one of the guys, Steve Mellon, says in mailbag, he said he could have just turned around and read your notes. He fancied it. You were that close to the away fans.
But quickly, big shout out to Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Lives in Bristol. Invited us all round for a bacon sandwich.
That's
and a,
nice,
and a drink
it?
On the way down. We had to pass in the end because we needed to drive straight through. He ended up getting the train anyway, so wouldn't have worked out. But a lovely invitation.
Thank you, Justin.
Next time.
He's a big whiskey man as well, as I learnt last night. So fair play to you, Justin. A man of many talents and passions. Any other notes then from Exeter before we move on?
No, Bishop is the main takeaway. Really exciting, the fact that, you know, I talked about the lack of game time that he's had. In going back to pre-season again, I was really excited by how Teddy looked in the summer. He looked like he was bang at it, and that's why that knee injury was so galling. The good thing was we did sort of hope that because it was a bit of a freak knee injury, it was just a twist, an overstretch, a medial knee injury, which is nowhere near as bad as an ACL, that we hoped that would just be surgery, fix it, and then you're back to where you were before. And he certainly hopes that that is the case. It's not another hamstring problem or an issue that's kind of plagued him for the previous few years. So he can add a completely different dimension to the team, the way that he can glide past people. He's such a joy to watch. He seems to sort of, he does just sort of glide across the surf, doesn't
yeah.
he? Turf. He's not sort of all action and pace and dynamic. He's just silky and smooth, and I really enjoyed watching him, and that's the one takeaway from the game, really.
Hmm. Let's talk then, let's move on to talk about the kind of the general mood, atmosphere around the team itself. Stuart, you wrote an your verdict pieces, without blowing smoke up your ample backside, are superb generally. But, and I know we've talked before about how you kind of agonise about them and all that sort of stuff, writing them. But today's, if you've not read it, it's on the back of the Anglian and the Star today. It's also online yesterday. Basically, it would have been easy for you to stick the boot in and kind of point out numerous failings and that kind of thing. But you went a kind of different tack and said that Lambert's here. We've got to back him, like it or not, sort of thing. Can we just talk a little bit, boys, about the kind of atmosphere around the team and why you wrote what you did, Stu, and that kind of thing? Because I think that's quite an interesting talking point at the moment. Because obviously there's a lot of negativity around town at the moment. Rightly so, given their poor run of form. So, Stewie, your verdict.
It probably goes against the grain of the general feeling at the moment, but I felt like I kind of needed to step back from that. And sometimes, as much as they try to be sort of mood pieces of the moment and reflect, you know, what we pick up on from fans, it kind of felt like the responsible thing to do. That I've kind of said what I wanted to say about no excuses, no more platitudes, squad's good enough, should be doing better. I said all of that after the Portsmouth game, and it's not got a lot better since then. But the fact that Paul has signed that contract, it's not going to do us as the media, it's not going to do the fans, it's not going to do anyone any favours if we just sort of continually ratchet up the negativity. We're not going to shy away from that. We'll continue to kind of look at the deficiencies, both from boardroom level all the way down to the pitch, and there are several at the moment, but he signed the contract, and whether you agree with that or not, you know, if you want Ipswich to do well, you want Paul Lambert to do well. And it wasn't that long ago that everyone was kind of lauding him, and there was the Lambo banner in the North Stand and all that sort of stuff. So maybe, as I said a few times, maybe I'm just trying to convince myself that it can work under him. I've got concerns. I've always had concerns, but there's still a long way to go in this season, and for now it just feels like an important juncture where, you know, they just need, sometimes it's, I felt like it was the time to write that piece was after a defeat like that. That's when they'll want to hear those sort of words, not after they hopefully beat Accrington on Saturday, because then that suddenly looks like you're just reacting to that. So that's why I went down that route.
You said it's an important juncture there. I think it's a really, really important juncture. All in now, all in on Paul Lambert, all eggs in that basket, all eggs in the league basket, out of all the cups. This Accrington game is really, really big, and my worry is that there could be a bit of an air of nervousness, an air of not anger, that's maybe going a bit far, but frustration in the air, when really they really need to win this game. It's really important that the slide stops. A win at home for the first time since the end of September, against a beatable side, but a side that are very much in considerably better form than Ipswich, aren't they? But it's going to need everyone to kind of be on the same page for that game. And my worry is that the nerves might creep in. But then on the other hand, my gut feeling is that they'll go out there and win it. And that, repeatedly, Ipswich players and the management have said that this could turn on one result. And I think that's true. I think it could. And hopefully this weekend's that one. But it's a massive game. The most important game for Paul Lambert since that opening game at Burton, I'd argue, one of the biggest games of his time at Ipswich.
Roscoe, among us, you are the most fervent of Town fans. So you're obviously now you're living the dream by covering the club, but you're also still a fan. How are you feeling about things at the moment?
Just got to deal with it now, haven't we? We've got on for 5 years, so...
Are you worried?
No, I don't think so. I think we've got the quality and ability there in the squad to do well, but I think it's just this bad period. I think it was going to come, I think, this season at some point. I don't really agree with Stuart Taylor's sort of said, oh, if it happened earlier this season, you know, then, you know, change the form around, people would have had a different view, but...
I think people would have a different, if it was flipped around, the view would very much be different. But if Ipswich had started with 15 games without a win, I would worry whether
Lambert wouldn't still be
whether he would be the hand or the tiller.
But it's one win in 15 for Ipswich, and that's exactly what Paul Hurst's record was when they pulled the trigger. So if they'd have started the season with one win in 15, you know, there's already some murmurings around Lambert now. Goodness knows what they'd have been without that sort of good run to precede it as well. So you can't start sort of going, well, if you muddled all the results up and if you'd have offered us this position at the start of the season, it doesn't work like that. They're on this terrible run. You're only as good as your last few games, as Paul Lambert keeps saying, I played for big clubs and you're only as good as your last pass. You know, that's true of you know, the season in general as well. The start of the season's gone now, and there's no point sort of keep harking back to that, because this run is now going to start being longer than the good run if they're not careful. Andy mentioned the Burton game. I want them to get back to that mentality. I think there was a bit of fear about the players. I think they talked a lot about sort of embracing, you know, we're the best squad and we're going to go for the title, never mind simply promotion and all that sort of stuff. But I think behind the scenes that they were driven by a bit of doubt and a bit of fear that they'd come down in such a limp manner to finish bottom, and they went into that Burton game with few injuries and suspensions, and they went into that almost with a bit of an underdog's mentality, you know, that we've got to want this more and we've got to battle for this, and maybe that good start and maybe all those hand-holding team celebrations at the end, just, you know, all of us got a bit carried away, us fans, the players themselves, maybe there was just a bit of a collective exhale and a sigh of relief to sort of say, okay, right, we've started all right, we're okay in this division. And they've a few of them now, haven't they? The players have all mentioned the word complacency, and that can happen on a subconscious level as well. Without you realising it, you just lose that little edge, that little psychological edge, and they hopefully this run will kind of get that back into them.
We've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about rotation and systems. And again, before this run of five league games they had prior to Christmas, talking about that, hopefully that's stopping it needs to stop now, doesn't it? If you're going to, I think complacency can creep in if you don't even know if you're going to be playing each week. You like, you don't take the same responsibility maybe if you're not, you know, you're the back four, take responsibility for it, be the back four. And if you're being chopped and changed, we don't need to go into all of that again, but find your best 11, find your best system, Paul, and if you do that, the players are good enough to get the job done this season. They are. They really are.
Okay then, boys, we've had half an hour of solid football chat, which has been pretty morose and depressing. So shall we pause for a small nonsense interlude? Roscoe, if you could do the...
Mark's big question.
Stuart Watson, pick a number between 1 and 33.
23.
Ooh, interesting. This is a good one for the start of a new year. Three words which describe you and those which describe your fellow kings.
Can we come back to this one?
Is this too heavy? Should we come back to this one? Stewie, pick another number.
Why don't we do... Maybe we should put some thought into this one. Another number,
22. 22 is your top five films.
We've done that one before, haven't we?
No.
Other TV shows.
Hmm? Why don't we do three words and we'll go round. So we could start with Ross and then so me... Andy and you will come up with a word each for Ross.
Start with Ross?
Yeah.
I've got to start, have I?
Puppy.
He's a puppy.
Thank you. I think that's a compliment.
I'd say amusing.
Amusing?
Yeah, he's very amusing.
Yeah.
So you've got puppy amusing.
What should I say about Ross?
Well, to you, mate.
Happy. I'll go with happy. Yeah,
he's largely happy. Yeah. He's a happy chappy.
Very chilled young
man. Enthusiastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I could think of several words to describe Ross, actually. Most of them would be positive, I think. Okay, so we've got puppy, amusing, and happy.
I could have said sick, because then you could use it for sort of both terms. Yeah. both positive and ill.
You've not actually had an ailment for a while, have you, Ross? Although every so often you stand up and grab your ribs in the office and go, oh! That mystery rib ailment. All right, so they're the words for Ross. Are we going to do me next?
Yeah.
Hutchie, give me a word for me.
Enthusiastic.
Yeah, I'm definitely enthusiastic. About things I am enthusiastic about, I get very enthusiastic. Excitable.
The word you use the most, tremendous. It's normally preceded by absolute.
Yeah.
Absolute tremendous. That's what you use.
Yeah, so.
Braggadocious, you use that term a little bit.
I love
bit.
Braggadocious, yeah.
Would you take that?
I'd like am I braggadocious? I probably am braggadocious, actually, yeah. Roscoe, give me a word for me.
Gaffer.
No, that was a cop-out, wasn't it?
That's just his job.
That's literally just my title. Come on, think harder. Inspirational, leader.
Mentor.
Mentor. Philanthropist.
Friend.
Fighter.
Yeah, well, that used to be true, yeah. Okay, so that's interesting. They're nice words. I like them. Hutchie, let's do Hutchie. Hutchie, what did I say about Hutchie?
Chilled.
Well, he's very chilled, yeah.
Chilled.
Very chilled.
Adventurous.
Adventurous?
Yeah, you like to go places.
Yeah, you are, actually. Yeah, you are.
The chilled out adventurer.
what word would I use to describe you?
I will climb Everest.
Yeah.
But it's going to be very casual.
Take your time. Oh, what is that? Ross, have you set fire to something? Is that your mic?
It's my mic.
Okay.
He's back.
He's back.
Wow, what was that? Hutchie, what would I say about you? I would say you are insightful.
I don't know if anyone's ever described me as insightful, but thank you very much.
You are insightful.
In what way?
I've said it so. Just the way that you go about approaching things. You kind of have a different way of thinking about things. I think, anyway.
Take it.
I'll take that, yeah.
So we've got insightful, we've got... adventurer, and we've got, what was the other one?
Chilled.
That works pretty well for you.
I'll take that.
The big one, the star of the show, Stuart Watson.
Oh, come on.
How are we describing Stuart Watson? I'm going first.
The ego, the star of the show.
I was contractually obliged to say that. Not to all, of course.
Is that how it is? Is that how this is?
Well,
is that
what do you mean?
Is Stu like the star?
Well, he's got the most followers on Twitter. He's the biggest name.
That's how we judge it.
Well, yeah. You two are the main men. Me and Roscoe really are just the balls dragging along the ground behind you.
Begrudging would be
Please
my
never
word.
Say
for
that again.
Would be my word for Stu.
Begrudging.
Begrudging. Yeah. He accepts his stardom begrudgingly.
It's like Brian Clough when he gets the caretaker gig. He's like,
he doesn't want to be the caretaker manager, but he loves the club.
Yeah.
He can't say no to Marcus.
I would say for Stu, definitely the word that comes most to my mind is logical. There's no, like, your mind is so logical about the way you think. The way you talk things through, you have to explain everything to the nth degree. It's clearly a very rational and logical thought process going on in that big head of yours, which makes you extremely talented.
Big bald head.
Can I throw out two?
Yeah.
I want to say thorough, because you're very thorough, but I also want to say misunderstood.
Misunderstood? What, by his missus? Or?
No, just I think there's more to Stu than the doctor.
Who's he misunderstood by?
Andy knows me best.
The public.
So carry on.
I just think there's hidden depths to this man. He's not just a doctor. He's not a stethoscope. there's more to him.
Yeah.
Let that come out, Stu.
We were having a chat in the office the other day, Stu, and you suddenly revealed, and I often have, not a go at you, but joke with you that you don't get excited about anything in the same way that I get excited about almost everything. And you got very animated talking about space, and you were throwing sand on the desk and using it to illustrate how someone can find a black hole in space.
Where did you get sand?
It wasn't
from
actual sand. It was
no, it's literal sand. It was figurative sand. But you got very animated and revealed this kind of passion for all things space that I had only really touched on very briefly with you before, and. As a result of this conversation, you decided you were going to buy a telescope.
I might buy a telescope. Yeah. I might start with some binoculars. It might be my.
They're going to have to
my
be strong
thing this year.
Binoculars.
I'm going to get into a bit
Do
of.
Do you want to start an astrology podcast?
Yeah.
You and Patrick Moore.
Space is mental, though, isn't it?
It is literally mental.
This sounds like the start of a very long conversation that I don't know if there's time for now.
Yeah. That would be my happy place, is that, you know.
In space?
Not in space.
Alone in space.
We'd just sit here.
Yeah,
and we'd probably be a little bit inebriated as well, and then we'd go really deep on space and alternate universes and the probability of
literally get lost
life
in a wormhole.
Yeah,
that's one for the next live pod then. Superb. So can we just review, Roscoe? We've got what was it? Happy puppy. What was the other one?
Doesn't matter.
I like to put dot the i's and cross the t's. Amusing, of course it was.
The amusing happy puppy.
I was tremendous.
Enthusiastic
and fighter, which is no longer relevant. Hutchie, you were insightful, adventurous, and
chilled.
And Stewie was logical, misunderstood.
And Ross hasn't done
a word. Come on, for Stew.
Lad.
Lad.
I think he
misunderstood. Logical lad.
Yeah.
Great.
I think he is.
You sound like an enigma.
Yeah. Good lad.
Almost like a trapped lad. A lad that wants to be a lad,
yeah,
but then remembers he's the father of one,
yeah,
and lives in the Suffolk countryside.
I think of all of us in here, you are definitely the biggest lad.
Am I?
And every so often it comes out, but not very often these days.
No,
that was good, wasn't it? I enjoyed that. After all,
that's good.
Let's do next transfer window. The transfer window is swung open like a barn door before it slams shut at the end of the month, like it always has to do. I want to get a little bit deeper, if we can, into what we think might happen. Stewie and Hutchie, actually. Hutchie, this is your time of the season. This is your time to shine. This is when you work the phones. You're on the phone to someone on Friday, in fact, whose name I'm not going to drop unless you want to drop it.
You can drop it if you want.
Oh, is that Barry Fry's name that's just fallen on the floor?
Yeah, just pick that up.
No comment.
Absolutely.
It might have been.
And Stewie, you've done something, in fact, for the paper tomorrow and online, looking at the whys and wherefores of the transfer window, what might happen at Town. So who wants to kick us off? What are we thinking may or may not / needs to happen at Ipswich Town this transfer window?
Should we talk generally?
Mm-hmm.
Generally first. I think generally there needs to be some outs. There needs to be some slimlining in different ways, both in terms of exits from just exits, and then some short-term exits. and probably one or two additions if possible. I don't think anything mad is needed, personally. Yeah, just one or two additions. That's very general, but we can get into some of the
I think, Paul, just as last year, I think there comes a point where managers, tipping points where managers make up their minds on players that, okay, you're not for me, I've decided now. I mean, we look back at the Accrington Cup game when last January, and Paul sort of said, I've made certain players now, I've kind of decided that they're not for me.
There was only one player never played for him again after that, Spence. Jordan Spence.
Yeah. But you started to see some started to phase out, and I think in the manager's mind gets made up, and perhaps he's kind of reached that stage during this little festive period with one or two. Whether they leave this month or whether that comes, like you sort of talked about the rotation, that we see them start to fall off the rotation wheel and ultimately depart in the summer, we'll see. But they need to trim this squad down, definitely.
Well, should we talk about that then, about players who could move? I think one... There's one player who very clearly doesn't have much of a future at Ipswich, and that's Jordan Roberts now, isn't it? Not involved in his competition, the Elf Trophy. That's why he was as excited about it as me, but not involved. He's had some injury knocks, but he's played 1 minute of league football. His contract's up in the summer, and I would say that a departure of some description would be very likely in this month, either a loan, mutual consent or something like that. I think he needs to go somewhere and play. He was what, 25 probably, something like that. He needs to go and play, and it's not going to be at Ipswich.
Andre Dizel's situation intrigues me. He's out of contract this summer. I can't find any evidence of him containing one of those option clauses as well, so I'm not 100% on what the situation is there, but Norwich were interested, strongly interested. That you know, there was a lot of talks going on last summer. It didn't happen. He's now going into the last 6 months, and his situation, I think he would have been rushing to sign something in the summer because of his lack of game time last year. That's not changed. That situation has not changed over the last 6 months. I don't think he started back-to-back games. His game time has increased, but it's still... You know, okay, he's in and out every three games now instead of every six or seven games. That's not enough for his development. It would break my heart to see Andre Dizel, a proper Ipswich boy, son of Jason, walk away for free, especially if it happened to be to Norwich. What do Ipswich do? If they put a contract on the table, if he doesn't sign it, then you're probably starting to have to look at taking what you can get for him now.
Yeah, they would be due a compensation fee if he did go somewhere else for free,
yeah,
in the summer. But those fees aren't great, are they? They're decided at tribunals with very little. There's very little thought goes into those in terms of actually how good a football player he is. It's all based on what he's played, which isn't an awful lot to talk of, is it? And how much time and finance have been put into his development by Ipswich, which is obviously a number of years, but you're not going to be getting any fee of note, I would suggest.
Aaron Cresswell was a tribunal fee, wasn't he, in a similar situation, under the age of 24, is it, if you're a free agent?
I think you have to offer a contract to be eligible for that, which they've done, Ipswich, haven't they?
Yes. I believe so, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. I think Cresswell was like £250,000, something like that, in that region, and then they talk about top-ups and all that sort of stuff further down the line. So that's really interesting. Dizel, in terms of out-of-contract players, Gwion Edwards is another one.
Yep, he's got an option on his, but the initial contract was only a two-year contract, so his is up in the summer. Any rush to offer him fresh terms at the moment? I would suggest probably not. Maybe a candidate for the option to be taken at some point, but I'm not sure there'll be any rush to go out and offer him another 3 years at the moment.
But whether he was to go in January, I couldn't see that. I think they need him at the moment.
They'd need to bring somebody in.
Whether they see him as part of the long-term plan or not remains to be seen. But so, sellable assets, it's Wolfenden and Downs, isn't it?
Largely, yeah.
And I would be staggered if they were to go this month. I know every player has a price, but what a wrong message to send out to everybody if you were to do that in the middle of a promotion push to next year. Unless one of them gets a an injury, touch wood, trying to find something there. And that, you know, that their value is only going to go up over the next 6 months, you would think, isn't it? So why sell them now? You know, it's a different conversation. If they don't go up this summer and they get, and then championship clubs come in and you've then got to start to weigh up how much money you might get and what you could do in terms of reinvestment. But don't sell them now.
In Wolfenden's case, Wolfenden's only played less than 20 League One starts. And that's the top level of football that he's played. So you're right. The value should only be going up. He's going to be a fixture in the team for the rest of the season. That looks to be the case. And if he is, add another 20 starts to that. That's at least going to add to his transfer value. But there's a lot more value left in someone like Luke Wolfenden, for example.
If I'm perfectly honest, and I'm a big fan of Luke Wolfenden, and I think he's got all the attributes to go all the way, you know, he's what everyone's looking for in a modern day centre half now, but sometimes we're a little bit guilty of sort of positive bias with him, and he's still, there's a learning curve going on there. And you know, we've talked a lot about Toto earlier. Luke wasn't without mistakes at the weekend and in the last few games. You know, there was a lovely moment where he was strong, he ran into the corner, took the ball off of the striker, out-muscled him, turned, played a nice ball out. But seconds later, he gets caught underneath a high ball. The goal that they scored from, it was kind of his stretching header that may be hypercritical there. But there are moments where his laid-back, you know, they keep talking about sticking a rocket up his backside, and he can look, the laid-back stuff can look really good, but there are times where, you know, just want him to switch on a little bit more. He's still learning. As you say, it's his first season in League One.
The Lincoln game was kind of the game at Lincoln was a bit of a highlight of what's bad in his game. I think he had as tough an afternoon as anybody did on that pitch. So yeah, there's plenty more for them to learn. Flynn's a little bit different, isn't he, in terms of his development stage? He's come on an awful lot in the first half at Wickham in particular. He was brilliant. He was really, really good, and I can absolutely see why a championship team would potentially look at him and see that he could go straight into their side. Luke Wolfenden, maybe not quite yet, perhaps. Which makes me think that maybe a move for Downs, somebody coming in for Downs anyway, is more likely in January than Wolfenden. But like Stu said, it's not the right message to be sending out.
You're talking about potentially the future captain of Ipswich Town with the sort of the Chambers Schools era coming to an end, whether that's this season, next or whatever. You know, this is someone that if you could get promoted, you could build your team around Flynn Downs. His progress has been that good. You've given him the captain's armband a couple of times now. I think it would have to take the proverbial silly money to take him away, and I don't even know what sort of price you would put on that. What on earth would you want for him in January to make it worth your while?
That's a really difficult question.
That's hard,
isn't it? If Ipswich don't get the top fees for their players when they've sold them of late, but is Flynn Downs worth, is he a 6, 7, 8 million pound player? Other teams in the chat, like Luton, for example, sold young fullbacks to the Premier League for £10 million apiece in the summer, didn't they, after a League One season? Mm-hmm. So if they can get those fees for those players, you could argue that Flynn's in the same in the same boat, but you would worry that Ipswich wouldn't be getting that level of fee. Mm-hmm. I hope they would anyway, even if the decision was to sell. But
interesting, recently you wrote a bit, Stu, I think it was, Lee O'Neill refusing to rule out potentially selling his kind of crown jewels.
You're never going to weaken your negotiating position. So those sort of interviews with chief execs and people going into transfer windows are always going to be, you're always going to leave yourself somewhere to go. You very rarely do they say no one's for sale. But it was the manner of like, oh yeah, well, we've discussed it and it's something we're thinking about, and if it's right in a business sense. It didn't sort of completely convince me that you know, they're very, very reluctant to let it happen. Where's Marcus's head at, you know, in terms of, we've seen how much he's withdrawing his money at the moment, and I don't know. He's turned down bids before, you know, we have to say that. he gets a lot of flack, but he turned down big money for McGoldrick at sort of the peak of his powers from Leicester. I think that was 8 million. Murphy, for quite a long time, they turned down money for him before eventually selling him. So I would like to think that, you know, they would do so again.
Hindsight, though, should they have accepted the McGoldrick money?
Yeah.
In hindsight, yes.
Yeah, so...
Hindsight's a wonderful thing.
But maybe Marcus is thinking with that... With that hindsight, very, we can't get inside his mind, can we? We would love to be in there for just half an hour, just to.
I'd like to live a day as Marcus Evans.
What would you do with that day?
Spend as much money as I physically could. yeah, I'd have good times, very good times. Boys, okay, so we touched on their possible departures. So we're saying J. Robs, which should be a scandal. Dazelle, Downs. Wolfenden. Any others to throw in before
loans,
we move on?
Loans would be the general. Yeah. They're out of the EFL Trophy now. Dobra, El Mazzuni, they would be the prime candidates in terms of the youngsters. Can they get them a League Two club like they did with Wolfenden last year? I don't know if they've done enough for a League Two club to want to go out and get them in January.
It's got to be the right League Two club that would play to their strengths as well. Otherwise, you're just chucking the poor boys into a situation that's no good for them. So it is difficult with those kind of.
They'll be careful.
Players.
I mean, they'll have learnt from the Nidam situation, sending him all the way up to St Johnstone in Scotland and barely got a minute up there. So they'll weigh that up carefully. And then there's probably the next level of 23s players, Drinan, dare I say.
He's already done two loans, come on.
There's a few other of the kids in there as
can
well.
Can I throw a name in?
Go on.
Which you may not have thought of. Big Bart, Bartosz Białkowski. Do Town, because he is having a good season for Millwall by all accounts. Every time I see Twitter at a weekend, there's Millwall tweeting another incredible save that he's made. Do Town consider cashing in on Bart?
Absolutely. If there's an offer for him, absolutely.
Well, it was 900 grand that was on the table in the summer, and then when that fell through because of the medical dispute about the cartilage in Bart's knee, hopefully now he's playing enough games regularly for them to kind of be convinced that that's all fine. If that was the money on the table in the summer, he's got a long-term contract. You would think that if they put that same deal back on the table, Ipswich would take it.
I can't see it being an awful lot more than that. It's a different manager there, of course, so with Gary Rowett in there now instead of Neil Harris, but they like him. They definitely like him at Millwall. Mm. Rowett likes him, but Rowett's only had him for a couple of months, so if it was, I don't know, my guess would be that it might go until the summer on that loan in good faith, and then see what happens in the summer on that one. But let's be honest, there's very little chance of him coming back to play for Ipswich. I can't see that happening at all. The water's under the bridge there. It's best for everybody to move on.
Mm. Okay, so that's departures. Now let's talk about sexy things. Incomings. What, if anything, have you heard with your ear to the floor, particularly Hutchie? And what do Town need? Do they need much?
In general, what I'm gathering is that it's proving hard to bring players in, simply because the kind of players Ipswich are after, top end, real top end, League One level players, and when you're going for players like that, there's competition, a lot of competition, because the lines between sort of players that can contribute heavily in the Championship and can contribute to a promotion push in League One are quite blurred. So not only are you competing with other League One contenders potentially for transfers, you're also having to deal with lower end Championship clubs. Some of those clubs are where you're potentially trying to get the players from, and the level's quite blurred. So in terms of it's proving quite difficult itself.
Schmoddix is a prime example there, isn't it? You know, it's Ipswich would want him in on loan, but then you're up against people like Huddersfield and others in the Championship at the lower end of the Championship. So.
Yeah, I think Ipswich have put their feelers in on Schmoddix, but haven't gone hugely firm on it, because I think they just know that up until a few days ago, I don't think Lee Johnson had decided whether or not he was available for loan. He is, but would much prefer him to be in the Championship. He would also prefer him not to go to a promotion contender in the Championship.
Rival,
that's Hull out of the equation, and Huddersfield and a lower reaches Championship team is much more likely, I think. I checked in on this one on Saturday night, actually, and that's still the case. I think Ipswich would love him, and he would love to come to Ipswich because he's a Colchester boy. He's got a lot of all his family, friends here. And I think we were talking about this on the car on the way home, weren't we, about how good it would be for him to drop into a situation where you can make a real impact on a season, and rather than just being a good performer in a floating mid-table side, but be a real catalyst for something, and that would be attractive. But competition is making things hard.
Okay, any other names or types of player that we can throw in?
Goalkeeper is interesting. If Norris gets recalled, we don't know what the situation is there. Do they go out and get another one, or do you go with Schibek and Harry Wright, who I think Harry's injured still at the moment? Right back, do you know how long is it going to be before Kane Vincent-Young is back? They're talking about him, you know, he's not even been in the gym, in the swimming pool, he's done nothing at the moment. They're still waiting for the surgery to go down. I think no one really knows with those types of sort of adductor groin type areas quite how it's going to react. So they talked about February as a return date for training. You can add a few more weeks on top of that. So they've certainly missed him. Do you try and go out and get a short term like-for-like type loan, maybe? Someone like Josh Clark at Brentford springs to mind for me. I think he's available. Someone that's young, dynamic, runs at people, played quite a lot of games in the Championship, can't get in the team at the moment. I think they've made him available for loan. Something like that, just as a short-term fix to kind of get you back to how they were playing pre-Vincent Young injury.
I think for me that one would depend on what they go with in terms of a system, which is again a struggle because they haven't nailed one down. Like if they're going with the back four, I wouldn't be rushing to get a right back. I'd be happy with Danasian, and maybe if you're happy with Wolfenden as a potential backup in that scenario. But if you're going with wing backs, I think you probably need to do something, don't you? Because I'm not convinced by Gwion Edwards in that position. I'm starting to feel a bit for him because it's not his position. It's, I don't know where it would rank on his positional rankings, but it's probably not in the top three. So, I'm starting to feel a little bit for him, but I'm not sure he's the answer to that at all.
It's a tough one. We're talking about ins. You can make an argument for quite a number of positions, but it's a big squad, and I think if you end up with a really big squad, that can create issues. They're already taking two or three additional players on top of the bench to certain places. Doesn't create the best environment behind the scenes if there's people sort of moping and unhappy and all that sort of stuff. And so they've got to be better than what they've got, otherwise there's no point in doing business for the sake of it. Central midfield, well stocked. Centre back, if they're going to play three at the back, and we're talking about how Toto's star is on the wane, you've got Wilson, Chambers, Wolfenden, and Toto as your fourth one, and then potentially sort of Danasian, Kenlock to kind of fill in for a back three. Do you go out and get, you know, especially with the goals that they've been conceding, the Tommy Smith stuff just doesn't go away. I really can't see that happening. I still think he'll end up back in the MLS again. But that you could make an argument that they could do with another centre-back.
Yeah, but only if they're going with the back five, back three, back five, whatever you want to call it. And we've talked about it so much, I'm not going to go into it hugely again, but that wouldn't be what I would do. But I'm not the manager. I'm quite a long distance away from being the manager, actually. there are a fair degrees of...
There's a few people in front of you, I think it's fair to say.
And then I would say in terms of an attacking recruit, you know, the goals have dried up, and you can decide whether that's down to sort of creativity or the actual strikers themselves. Norwood's gone a little bit off the boil since the injury. Jackson, I know he scored goals at the start of the season, but I don't think he himself would ever say that he's a prolific type of striker. I think they're both very similar. Is there an argument that of the four strikers they've got, Keane is a sort of a clever link-up player. Norwood and Jackson are very similar. They're always on the move, work hard, chip in with a few goals. And then you've got Freddie, who maybe sort of looks like he'll be used in sort of a wider role, a hustler and a bustler. Do they need a target man? Do they need someone, a proper out-and-out physical target man, just for when the pitches are heavy at the moment, when you're going to war, when you need a different option?
Only if they can make chances for him. Because I think you'd begin to see Ipswich look even less fluid if they started playing with one. but they would need to nail down what they're doing in terms of width and crossing and who's getting those balls in, how the ball's getting into the box if you're going to play a target man. Otherwise, I'd really worry that it's just going to be lumping it.
Mm.
But maybe you do. Maybe you need that for the final 10 minutes of games when you're trying to chase something. To be honest, if it was me, I'd be happy with the strikers that they've got. I'd address the wide areas and supplying them and making chances, which hopefully Teddy Bishop can do a lot of, rather than going down a new striker route.
Yeah, wing is the one for me. If you go through that list of wingers, Edwards inconsistent, Judge doesn't want to play there, positionally ill-disciplined, goes wandering.
Rose injured,
Lancaster's injured, Freddie's only just got back. We've discussed it. Probably a big part of the reason that they've been messing around with formations is because of the lack of balance in the squad, and he's probably not felt that he's got the wingers to play the way that he truly wants to play. So they've been linked to someone like Jordan Shipley, who's a left-footed player at Coventry who can play wide left. I think that's an area that they might look at, whether it's someone permanently or whether it's a loan from a Premier League / Championship club. That might be an area that they feel.
Jordan Graham's available.
Thanks.
Flash Jordan. Right, okay. Let's draw a line under transfer there then. So follow the boys, obviously, for all the latest on Ipswich Town's transfer news. Also, please, let me make this plea to you out there. When you see a transfer room on Twitter, please consider the source. If it's from someone calling themselves EFL News with 4 followers, it's bollocks. So please do consider the source before you get too excited about stuff. If we do stuff, then you can start to think there may be something in it. We'll badge up things clearly as Ipswich Town transfer rumours, and if we think there's something more in it, it won't be badged up as a rumour. We'll cover that properly. Anyway, boys, this has been a very serious show today. I feel that we need some light amongst all this rather hard-going shade, and the light has to come from Roscoe.
My dear.
Let's go. Anytime you want. Yeah, we go.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Strike, brought to you by the greatest quiz show host on planet Earth, producer Ross.
Happy New Year.
Oh, God. Oh no.
Oh God.
Good start of year for the Strike.
Yeah. But apt in a way.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So this is a decade special.
Superb.
I think that might take too long.
Yeah.
We haven't got 10 years.
Yeah, we've only got half an hour, Ross, come on.
The questions will be based on the decade, which was terrible.
I see where you're going.
Which is terrible. So we've got Guess Who. Swiss player played in this decade.
The last decade.
This player played in the 1960s.
Clue number one. He scored 3 goals in 11 games for Town during the 2014-15 season. 3 goals, 11 games. Played in the 2014-15 season. Do you need another clue?
Noel Hunt.
Correct.
Got it.
Yes! Get in! Suckers, eat it! Excuse me, are you not more impressed with that? I just got Noel Hunt out of thin air. Come on.
Yeah, I'm really impressed.
Really, really impressed.
Yeah, good, excellent.
1 at Charlton, 2 at Millwall.
All right, fair enough. You didn't get it right, did you?
The other clue was his brother is also a footballer. If you
called Stephen.
Time flashback. Once again, part of the decade thing.
Yeah, we've got that.
So we've got the theme. We've got the theme, yeah.
Who scored Town's first goal of the 2010s? Jack Colback, Owen Garvin, or Grant Leadbitter? Town beat Blackpool 2-1 in the third round of the FA Cup. That was
I'm
going to
go
game.
With Owen Garvin.
Okay. First goal scored this or that decade.
I'm going to say, what was it, Garvin, Colback, or?
And Leadbitter.
I'm going to say Colback.
Okay.
I think it's Garvin.
It's actually Colback.
Yes.
Garvin scored the winner.
2-0 suckers. New decade, new domination from Heath in the score, in the strike, not the score.
Yes.
Time flashback, question two. Who scored Town's last goal with Roy Keane as manager of Ipswich?
Who? Oh,
Ipswich.
Ip.
Ipswich. I don't know. I don't know. Whatever. Move on. The game was a 1-1 draw with Coventry, his second to last game. The options are Rory Fallon, Jack Livermore, or Jason Scotland.
Jake. Was it Rory Fallon?
I think it was Jake Livermore.
What are the options? Livermore, Fallon, or
Scotland?
I don't know. Jason Scotland.
Fallon.
No, you said
that
Fallon.
That was me. I'll take it though.
You started celebrating there, Mark.
I did, yeah. Then I realised I didn't say Fallon at all. 2-1-0.
Okay. Last question for Town Flashback. One of the standout moments of the decade was Town's 1-0 win of Arsenal.
Yes. Tamás Priskin.
He scored a goal.
Yeah.
Who set him up for the goal?
Oh, Jesus. Oh.
Colin Healy, David Norris, or David Healy?
Ooh.
A little trick there.
I know the answer.
Okay.
Go on, you go first then, Hutchie.
Okay.
I think it was Healy. I think it was Colin Healy.
Okay.
Healy, or what's the other one?
Norris.
Norris. I'll say Norris.
It was Colin Healy.
It was Colin Healy, yeah.
Sick.
3-2.
Colin Healy.
Yeah. Have I won then?
No.
Just calm down. Sorry.
Numbers game makes its return again.
Is this the final question?
Calm down.
No. You've got three more questions after this.
There's
a bonus one if it's a draw. Paul Jewell was appointed Ipswich manager in January 2011.
Just say Town.
Town.
Town manager.
But how many games did he win during his time in charge? Closest to the correct answer, he managed 85 games.
20, did he win 25 games? Is it 25?
It's not 25, it's not 25. 85 games.
He managed 85 games. Yeah. How many games did he win? And you're claiming it's not 25.
It's not 25.
It's definitely not 25.
No.
Okay. Is 25 the answer to the next question?
No, actually.
85 games. How many games did Paul Jewell win? Stewie, go on.
Out of 80, was it 85?
Not 25.
34.
Okay.
I'm gonna say 25.
Okay.
I have 85 games. I'm gonna say
70 odd, probably.
Yeah. I'm gonna say 26.
26. It's 29 games. Are you closest?
4-2.
So he's calm now.
Well, because I know there's still another 14 questions left.
Yeah. During Mick McCarthy's reign, we didn't score many goals, did we? How many goals did we score? In 279 games, so how many goals did we score?
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Did you script that bit?
Yes.
So how many games did it? 249 games?
279.
279. How many goals did Ipswich Town score in 279 games? Yep. Is it league and cup, or is it just league?
All competitions. Not friendlies, of course.
279, yeah.
Go on, Mark.
There's a few big results in there, but not many.
285.
302. 284. Which is correct, it's
343.
Oh, we've underestimated the poor guy.
Sorry, Mick.
Still not great, though, is it?
4-3.
Okay, last question. We'll have to go to the bonus question if actually does get the result right.
Let's take it to the bonus.
Ballant Bynoe?
It's all on Ballant Bynoe.
How many games did he play?
How many games did Ballant Bynoe play for Town?
Of course, he was subbed on his debut.
I know the answer.
Ooh.
Go on, Stu, you go first.
Come on, Mark.
I'm out, so...
How many games did Ballant Bynoe play for Town? We're talking, obviously, the first team, non-friendly.
Yes.
4.
I think it was 5.
7.
Oh,
so here we are.
You're not going to let Stu answer?
I'm out.
Yeah, he's out.
I'm dead to the game.
Were you going
to
say 7?
Did he play 7? Did he?
Yeah, just 7.
Obviously, he wasn't going to say 7.
I wasn't going
to
play 7.
So we've got a bonus question, apparently.
Yeah, it's a tiebreaker.
So
just let me win, Hutchie. Come on, I never win.
So Hutch may know this one.
Oh, great.
So in the service station on the way back, I got two chocolate bars. Because you can get two for like one.
This seems
five.
Like a really unfair bonus question.
What is your question? What chocolate bars did you buy when Hutchie was in the car with you?
Mars bar in the room. I've eaten half the duo during the show.
Yeah.
Which was the other chocolate bar I bought? I'll give you the three options.
This man next to me was in the car with you. How is this fair?
You may not remember. I'll give you the three options. You've got three options.
Can I ask you a question? Another question.
Yeah.
Did you have a tie-breaking question?
No. Right. I just spotted that there. I thought, oh, did you actually know it before I give an option?
No.
Tell me.
Look, let's just go with it and see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure this is fair, but anyway, carry on.
Twix?
Yeah.
Duo?
Yeah.
Did I get another Mars bar? Did I get two Mars bars? Or did I get a double-decker?
You definitely get a double decker because you really have to think about that. You're thinking, I need another chocolate bar. So you either got a Mars or a Twix. Just to stress for the people listening, Andy Warren was in the car and probably in the service station with Ross when he bought these. So I think whatever happens here, I'm the moral victor in this game. I'm going to say, actually, to be fair, we both need to say at the same time, don't we? Otherwise,
should we do that?
Yeah.
One, two, three, and then reveal.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
One, two, three. Twix.
Yes.
What are we going to do now?
What about how many calories are in a Mars bar duo?
Yeah, go ahead. How many calories?
How many calories in a Mars bar duo? I would say...
closest to the number.
Have you definitely got the combined figure there? Or have you got...
I need to confer with a doctor.
It's the thing that says kcal on next to it.
That will be that one, won't it? It won't be that, because that's the first bar.
Oh, God.
We've got no strike music left. Strike music is gone.
It's a kcal rating.
Is it for both bars?
So yes. For both bars, Mars Duo, I'm saying is...
Oh, no. Oh, okay, so I've got...
355 calories.
See, I don't know if this is for one half of this. This is ridiculous.
It should say on the back.
There should be a little thing on there.
I think it's that,
go
one
on,
there,
just
mate.
Go with the number. What did you say?
355.
Okay. What are you saying?
If it's for both, I'm going to say 480.
It's... It says 177 is the kcal, but I think that's only for one half.
It's the bottom bit, the 400.
Let's just say Mark
shambles.
Won.
I won.
Congratulations. Well
I won. Outstanding.
You've been the Mars bar.
I don't want a Mars bar, I think they're foul.
Just put Barry Cotter on and let's forget this ever happened. Right?
But it did do the job.
Okay.
What job?
Make us laugh.
Hi guys, Barry Cotter here. That was another edition of The Strike with producer Ross. Tune in next week for another edition of The Great Quiz Show.
Thanks, Baz.
Right, mailbag time then. Sorry, Ross, I made you jump there. Woke you up. Theme tune, please.
Oh yeah, I'm full of cold.
You
so
are
I might
full
be a bit
cold,
tone
yeah.
deaf, but yeah. I'm gonna sing it anyway.
I think it might add a little something it's extra.
A different take.
Yeah.
Mailbag. It's time for Mark, Stu, Ross and Coldy Andy to dip into the mailbag. Doo-doo.
Superb. A tour de force, even for
that sounded,
cold.
That sounded poor.
I have to start with a question that Sindre Eliasson, our friend in the north, has been trying to get answered for many days now. He sent it in pre-live pod, and to my shame, I keep forgetting about it. So we've got to answer it to start off with. It involves Roscoe, which is why I haven't been able to ask it thus far. He says, scrolling back. So, he says, I travelled over from Norway for Fleetwood and Coventry away this season. Was it worth it? Absolutely. I'd like to know your most awful travel abroad. Mine must have been Derby away when we led 4-1 at half-time but drew 4-4. Mick was ecstatic with the one-point gain, which angered me. And then part two... Going to quite a few town games. Sindre, I think, is from Norway, by the way, just to clarify. Throughout my life, I've picked up and taken a liking to certain English accents, but the Ipswich/Suffolk accent is still vague and hard to pinpoint for me until I started listening to the KOA pod and heard Ross. Does he exemplify the Ipswich accent? His dialect is a wonderful listen.
Yes, he does.
Ross is what you'd describe in Suffolk as a good old buh. So in terms of your worst ever travel abroad, I don't know if he means for a game or just full stop, but certainly mine would be when I went to Turkey, and I shall never repeat that. Didn't enjoy it at all.
I'll be really boring. I haven't really had any travel nightmares.
You haven't?
Not really.
Even when you were arrested in Germany at gunpoint?
That's probably one of my best anecdotes, so some good came of that.
At the time, you must have been slightly...
I was perplexed, was my feeling at that.
Yeah. Stewie?
I went to Portugal and back in a day to interview Roy Keane.
Back in a day.
Pre-season once, and so I did it there and back in a day, and my flight home was delayed by 4 hours, which made for a long day of work. Ross yesterday said he was going to shoo us something, which that also exemplifies the Suffolk accent.
Did I? What were we going to shoo us?
What was I going to?
I'll shoo you something.
What was I going
to? I can't remember.
It wasn't particularly notable, but you did. And it's fine.
What's the worst place you've ever been abroad or travel abroad?
There's nowhere, really, I don't think.
Fair play.
Great.
There we go. There you go, Sindre. So, yes, Ross is a perfect example of the Suffolk accent. And there you go. There's our answers to our bad travels. Peck and Blue, we've already asked. Benjamin ITFC, I think his name is Benjamin Erie. Why do we play the ball from the back? It obviously didn't work on Saturday and led to nervy moments when it looked as if we were going to give the ball away. So we either play the ball from the back or we go long ball. Thoughts? No thoughts.
I don't really know what the question is. Like, yeah, if you can't do it properly, don't play out from the back.
Yeah.
If you're playing long balls forward, they need to be good long balls, measured.
The goal came balls. From a long ball, didn't it? It was Toto.
Yeah, if you play a good long ball, there's nothing wrong with it.
Mm.
Matt Thomas, friend of the show.
Number five.
Good old
He's
Matt.
He's the only one that we know.
Yeah. In the mid-80s, Bobby Ferguson was asked if he was concerned the team weren't scoring. He replied that as long as they were creating so many chances, the goals would come. Should we be concerned that so few chances have been created in league games? Hashtag dribbling Bishop might sort it, which I think is TM. Matt Thomas. So, yes.
Yeah, that's always... I think that was the point Stuart Taylor was kind of making, that sometimes you can take a step back and in a run of bad results, you can kind of think, did we deserve more? Did we create more? Could we have won games? If you kind of picked back through these last 10, 12 games, you could make arguments for certain matches, 2-2 with Blackpool, 0-0 with Wickham, the first half against Coventry. They've had chances to kill games off and they've created chances. I mean, the Keane header that Andy's mentioned, they had one hit the post as well just before half time on Saturday. I think the shots on target stats haven't been great, but I suppose you can always, you know, just because someone trundles through to the goalkeeper from 40 yards out doesn't suddenly mean you've played any better. I think they're working good positions on the pitch. It's just that final decision in the final third that doesn't quite... I think they're getting into working good areas, but I don't know whether that's a confidence thing, an overthinking thing or what. I mean, we saw it in the... What was the game before Wickham? Lincoln? I can't remember now, but they were getting into lots of good positions.
They scored 3 goals in that game as well.
Yeah, so... we keep saying that we hope that one win, however it would come, would turn things, you know, to get 1-0 up and then add a second, I think would do their confidence a world of good, and that could spark things. I'm not panicking yet.
Can we be upstanding, please, for Joe Fares?
Friend of the show.
Number 10.
The newest member of the pantheon of greats. That's the KOA Hall of Fame, friends of the show. Joe Fares, host of a rival podcast. Interesting. Thanks for getting involved, Joe. How big is Saturday's game and the first goal especially? Go behind and lose. The atmosphere could be toxic.
We were talking about that earlier, weren't we? But yeah, it's a really big game. I think it's their biggest since. With everything that's happened over the last sort of 10 days or so, going into a home game now, I think it's the biggest game since the Burton game, I would argue.
Mm. Joe would also be happy, of course, today because the Vikings won last night. Big Vikings fan.
Yeah.
Nigel G, man with the big fish, the carp, friend of the show. Number nine. What was the best thing, apart from hashtag KOA Live, and the worst thing you did in 2019? Bit belated, but have a great 2020. Thank you, Nigel. You too, my friend. What's the best and worst things that we did in 2019?
Best thing I did was get the new kitchen.
Yes, with the heated floor.
Yep. worst thing I did was... can't think of anything bad. It was a great year.
It was a great year all round. The best thing I did was definitely go to the Maldives. The worst thing I did was make the error of going into the office on December 27th when I could have worked from home, because it was a grim and hostile place.
Yeah, the worst thing I did was listen to you and come into the office on December 27th.
To be fair, I did text you and say, save yourself, don't come in, I've made a terrible error.
It was far too late.
It was.
It was far too late.
So I apologise for that. Stewie Watson, what's the best and worst things you did in 2019?
I've got nothing to...
Anything good or bad?
Everything was average.
Not that springs to my mind.
Everything was average.
Everything had its pluses and minuses.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Roscoe, anything stand out for you?
Moving in with Sasha.
Oh, of course.
Oh. And worst thing was not ordering Spider-Man in Germany.
What?
Actually, that needs some context.
Yeah. Is that a euphemism?
We went to a restaurant and there was a long-running joke that Ross was our son and that we were his two dads. Mm-hmm. So we got Ross a children's menu, all of the items were themed by superheroes.
Ah, okay.
And we wanted him to order a Spider-Man from a Turkish restaurant.
And what was a Spider-Man?
Don't know. It didn't give you any details.
I would have liked to find out. Ross Wishart wants to know, talking about Exeter, he says basically Town should have won the game. So who was at fault, players or manager? Is there one you can blame more than the other?
At Exeter?
Yeah.
Well, the players were good enough to win that game, I think.
So the players?
If we're having to pin a badge on one group or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But. Yeah, I think in the previous games we've been talking a lot about Lambert and rotation and system changing and lack of chemistry, and that's not helping the players at Exeter. There's no excuses there, because it was exactly the same for Exeter, who were a league below, and that team should have won. So therefore, I think, yes, you know, the players sometimes have the manager as a bit of a shield when it comes to criticism. So, yeah, players.
Okay. George wants to know, heard hashtag Honey Badger was at Sheffield United yesterday looking at Leon Clark. How likely is this transfer?
I saw that online. We need to look into it a little bit more. Wouldn't shock me. It's the sort of striker that would fit the profile. Scored goals at a higher level. Experience in terms of character would bring something just as much as his ability. I saw his header that hit the crossbar. Scored a goal that was a sort of a poacher's finish, wasn't it?
He'd be excellent for this level, wouldn't he? It
wasn't that long ago that he was scoring a lot of goals in the Championship.
He'd be brilliant.
Andy G. We start this decade as a third-tier club losing to a fourth-tier club in a tin-pot competition off the back of a run of 11 games without a win. Where do you think Ipswich will be at the end of the 20s?
I'd quite like to know where football's going to be at the end of the 20s. I think there may be change afoot in the whole structure of the game. And I don't know if that's good or bad. I just think there's some financial issues in football that will come to a head at some point in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know where it's going to end up. And that's very heavy. But
you know what I said about you earlier being insightful? That's why. Because that was not where my brain was going. Mm. Martin Code. What has Lee O'Neill brought to the club in his role so far? I'm sure there's plenty I don't know, which is why I'm asking. As to me, all I see so far is he's helped manage the club while we've been relegated. One win in 15 and given a 5-year contract to the manager who did that.
It won't be Lee's decision to do the contract. I'm sure he's involved in that, but that's ultimately down to Marcus Evans, isn't it? Lee works very, very hard. We've seen that, you know, ourselves. We see him at every away game. He's doing the same as us, jumping in his car, driving up and down the country. He's working every hour under the sun at the training ground. He's the one that's dealing with the agents and making the phone calls. We see him stood there with Paul pre-match having long conversations, and what exactly goes on behind the scenes we can't say, but all I can say with Lee is it won't be through want of trying.
Next question. Sorry, I'm just scrolling on to see how many we've got. Steve Mellon just says, did the boys enjoy essentially being in the away end? They were so close we could practically lean over and read their notes, I said earlier. Let's get involved, Steve. Hope you enjoyed. Well, you probably didn't enjoy the game. Tony Southgate, official KOA doorman. How many more games without a win until Lambert gets the sack? 25, 30. The 5-year contract could look pretty stupid if we don't win soon. So
it's like a question off the strike.
It is, yeah. But there surely is a point that if Town And we keep saying they're going to win and they're going to turn it round, but there surely is a point at which you have to start thinking, actually, they're not going to turn this
round. We had this conversation in the car. I kind of, exactly the same, hypothetically, I said to Andy, like, we don't think it will get to this stage, but, like, what does happen if it's, like, 5, 10, 15 without a win? You know, what? I don't know. It's,
That's why the contract is a bit of a puzzler, isn't it? Because there's still so many unanswered questions. But before you go handing out 5-year contracts, normally you have a bit more clarity and a few more answers to some questions. But
I think what we did say is that this contract's obviously been spoken about from the summer onwards, by the sounds of things, and that so the conversation started when it was at the peak of. You know, Lambert's put the heart back into the club, as Evans has supposedly told him, and, you know, increased attendances and all of that sort of stuff. So if those conversations have been happening for a little while and they've been ironing out probably a few of the details, and I'm convinced there'll be some sort of break clauses and that there'll be so many different subsections to that contract, it'll be unreal. But so you finally get to the stage where you're close to agreeing something. What sort of message does it send to Paul Lambert that you've kind of been giving it the big one to him, that you're here to stay, we're loving what you're doing, we're loving the sort of the bigger picture stuff and the improvements at the training ground and the connection with the fans and blah, blah, blah. And then you go, actually, we're just going to hold fire a little bit at the moment because the results have gone a bit, you know. And then you'd be saying one thing, but in reality your actions would be saying the complete opposite, that all of a sudden, actually, yeah, you are only 5, 6, 10 games away from being under pressure. So I think once you've kind of put the wheels in motion with that contract, you probably then do have to commit to it to kind of back up what you're saying to Paul Lambert, that you believe in him and you're sticking with him. But it's just really unfortunate timing, isn't it? Really unfortunate.
You're right, Hutchie.
Yes, thanks.
You look like you're full of illness.
Yep.
Rob Hughes. Paul Lambert and Stuart Taylor have had over a year to implement the style of play that Taylor referred to post-match. Is this not working because A, the players aren't good enough, B, it's not conducive for success in League One, or C, constant rotation has made it hard to set in place? So this style of play that we all agreed they have yet to see kind of set in stone, which of those three reasons is the most likely to be? Players not good enough.
All of the above.
All
probably
of it.
To varying degrees. They went down playing it that way, out from the back, splitting the centre halves and whatnot. Then I think a whole myriad of reasons has kind of stopped them establishing a style of play. The injuries they had at the start of the season, the form of Jackson and Norwood, meaning they went with 4-4-2 and went a little bit more direct than perhaps they wanted to. There's so many things that have gone into the melting pot with that. But we're at the stage, we're all in agreement now, just pick your style, pick your system, work on it, try and your best to get it to bed.
And I think the fans would back that as well. You have to, if you're going to, you accept the mistakes of the past, maybe, if there's been too much tinkering, too much of the rotation, but if you can see that something's starting to come together, that's when people will really get behind it. And that's what I want to see now.
Smithy, 73, as a supporter in my late 40s, I thought I'd seen it all, but this season has unravelled so quickly it's taken me to unknown depths of low. There's clearly a massive issue with the mentality of the squad. So do you think that we're mentally strong enough to achieve promotion? Obviously, we talked at the start of the season about the mental game of having to turn around at what was clearly a losing mentality last season, which they did, that fine start to the season. But now it's all starting to go a bit Pete Tong. Are the players mentally strong enough to turn it round?
Yes, I think they are. But it all feeds back in. Who are the players?
Like,
you can't.
Yeah, that's key, isn't it?
You can't chuck a net over what 20 players and say you're all going to, because you can't. You can have 11 on the pitch, and it, for me, everything feeds back to needing to find a level of consistency.
Yeah, the players, the core, your generals that go out there for you and feel like, I think you used the phrase before, Mark, carrying it on their shoulders. That, you know, I'm going to stick the club on my back today, and this is on me and the regulars, and this, you know. I don't know if anyone's kind of got that mindset at the moment that this is on me, this is on looking around to their left and right and thinking this is on us guys, and that comes back to the rotation.
Okay, let's take just a couple more now, because we are coming up to the hour and a half cut-off point. Kevin Mays, what other song lyrics can we expect to see in Stuart Watson match reports and verdicts? Because, of course, at the end of your verdict today, or yesterday, you quoted Coldplay, did you not?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I'll take any requests. I'll crowbar them in.
Outstanding.
Shamelessly.
On the subject of songs, can I just give a nod of approval to whoever's come up with the Idris Elmazouni chant that was coming out of the away end of the weekend?
What
to
is
the
it?
Tune of Saturday Night by Wigfield.
How's it go?
I don't know how the first bit goes. The general kind of... Elmazouni. I don't know what the was, because that's sometimes hard to
pick up. If you were involved in said chant, do let us know.
I absolutely love it.
Outstanding.
Saturday Night and I Like the Way You Move.
Yeah.
Is that all it is?
Pretty Elmazouni. Lady or something. Ah.
Was that all it was?
That's Be My Baby.
Sorry, I should know that. Peter Dwerryhouse wants to know, if World War III was to occur, may not be that far away given the current political climate, Trump and all that, which Ipswich players, past or present, would you want on the front line, and which one of you would cope the best in war? I reckon Ross. I'll tell you what, in war, Ross would get to the front line and then realise he'd left his gun back in his barracks.
Yeah, he's not looked after his equipment, has he? Yeah. He's not cleaned out.
And therefore he'd just hurl himself at someone. So, who would you want on the front line of the Ipswich players? You want your Chambers, don't you? You want your Skuse. They'd be first over the top.
Well, I'd want Cole a bit further back, sort of just...
Pushing pieces around the board?
Yeah, he would be more of just using like one of those long sticks and moving, like, what essentially look like action figures around a map. I think he'd be very good at planning the art of war.
Yeah.
Chambers very much is running up and down the trenches, motivating everybody, isn't he? Getting them... This is that you're doing it. This is for your families, for your freedom, for your country.
Yeah. Who's the war machine, though? Who in the town squad would you? Who you'd be like? Yeah, get behind him because he's going to do some serious damage.
Probably James Norwood. I think. I would quite like.
Messing around with a gun. That'll end well, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
He'd shoot himself. He would, by his own admission, I think he would admit that he'd end up shooting himself in his own foot or something.
Okay, maybe not James, yeah.
So which of us would do best in war? I'm going to go out on a limb and say none of us would fare very well in war, because it'd be horrific. No one fares well in war. No one enjoys war.
Nobody wins.
Nobody wins. Let's not do it.
I'd be a sniper.
Up on a roof somewhere.
Yeah. Dead-eye stew.
Just picking people off.
Exploding craniums like grapefruits from distance. And final question goes to Azza Boom, Aaron Tester, attender of the live
winner
show.
Of the live strike.
Winner of the live strike.
With me.
A king among men. If you were to go back in time to the 1800s without any objects, how would you prove to someone that you're from the future?
It's going down in the 1800s, 19th century, Victorian era.
You couldn't just make predictions of things that you knew were going to happen, because obviously you'd have no proof. So
what I would do?
Go on.
I would have prepared. If I knew that I was going back, I would make sure I'd brush my teeth, and had some mouthwash, and had some wonderfully minty fresh breath, and I'd have breathed on them and said, "Look, clearly everybody in the past has really bad breath, because I think they probably did." In Victorian London, even before then, I think there was a lot of bad breath going on. I'm going to do some mouthwashing, minty fresh. This is the future.
And what if they just come back and say you've just been chewing on a mint leaf?
They don't know what. They would know that it was different. They'd look at my nice straight teeth as well.
To be fair, Stewie, this strikes me as a sort of question
have
you would love.
Out predictions of what's going to happen.
Because how can
surely,
you...
if you've got no sort of objects, then knowledge is power, and you can.
But you
come
need
back.
To prove though.
Well, you're just going to make predictions, so what? I don't know what point we're going to get thrown back into the 19th century. We've got 100 years to play with here, but you can just start sort of going, oh yeah, there's going to be a thing called a light bulb's going to come out soon. Yeah, Edison, this guy, he's going to invent a light bulb.
It's going to be mad, y'all.
And then when it happens, they'll be like, okay, yeah.
So you'd need an element. You'd need to hang around for a bit. You'd need to get your point right. You'd need to have a really. You need to, because presumably we're going back into a random point, are we?
He just says the 1800s. Yeah.
You'd need to have a really good. If you had a really good knowledge.
Knowledge, and you know what the next event, major event, is coming up. Slavery. That's going to be abolished, mate. Civil war.
Industrial
and
revolution. Yeah. Have you ever been on a train?
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
Yeah.
These things called automobiles. Going to be awesome. Yeah. Okay, Roscoe, you in the 1800s.
You'd be the little urchin running around, sort of stealing things from people's pockets.
Yeah, please, sir, really can I have is. Some more?
I think like clothes. Like,
yeah, but they're are they objects? No, I suppose they're not, are they?
Well, we just appear naked. In the middle of the
they're really going to trust me. Yeah. This naked guy was banging on about a light bulb. what an idiot!
He had great breath though.
Maybe you best just keep your nut down, because if you start coming up with all this sort of, you're naked and you're proclaiming all this stuff's going to happen, you're going to probably get strung up in the street, aren't you?
To be fair.
Witch.
Exactly, witch.
Yeah, I would use it to my advantage and maybe try and get in first with some inventions.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Andy Warren invented the light bulb. Who knew?
Rewrite history.
Exactly.
That would be amazing.
Which, all films suggest that goes well, doesn't it, when you rewrite history. So
yeah. Super, excellent. That was a good mailbag this week. Thanks for all your suggestions and questions. Sindre, I hope you're pleased we've finally answered yours. And to those who we've not had time to get to, I do apologise, but thanks very much for getting involved. Get back in touch next week. Boys, this has been a long one today. It's been a lot of heavy chat.
No other business.
No other business.
We've got to, of course, play the Arch and Jingle, Roscoe, which I'm sure you've got lined up.
Yes.
Happy New Year.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore.
And astrology.
For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
/
astrology with Dr. Watson. That would take over the world of podcasting.
The new Patrick Moore.
Absolutely.
Will you be the games master as well, if you like?
That was cool, wasn't it? Obviously, as I always say, if you have enjoyed what you've been listening to for quite some time now, hit subscribe on your various podcast providers. Follow us on social media, especially at Kings of Anglia on Twitter. We now have a dedicated podcast Twitter page, plus Kings of Anglia on Instagram and on Facebook. And leave us a 5-star review on iTunes as well, because that helps with our visibility. All that being said, it is time for us to take our leave. Say bye-bye. Stuart's waving. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again next week.